Some people will just veto a horror movie.
Hang on, I didn't hit record. No, I don't know what's wrong with me. Hey. It's because I did this thing. It's okay. We didn't go very far that time. No. That's embarrassing. Oh, Jesus Christ. And it's all because I went for the finesse move and leaned in and did our music.
Don't you ever raise your voice at me. I am your mother.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Fear Response Podcast. We are so happy to have you. And we also have Steve with us for a very special Virgin Sacrifice episode. Welcome back, Steve.
Hey, everybody. Nice to be back. Thank you for having me.
Yes, welcome back. We're all warmed up.
Yeah. Is it nice to be back, though?
No, it's not. It's not. It's nice to be back with you two and your company. I always enjoy coming here, but having to watch this movie, was not a fun time.
Yeah, we knew that going in.
I've been through this movie a number of times, watched it a number of times. You know, I was on edge going to sleep last night too. It just kind of puts you in a mood.
Mm-hmm. I think I was tired enough to not have trouble falling asleep, but it did enter my dreams. Aspects of it did enter my dreams. They weren't nightmares. It was just the subject matter was present. You know,
you dreamed watching the movie again
and just enjoying
the entire
myself.
Thing.
That's dedication.
I did that just for prep.
You should take some dream notes.
Subconscious prep for the recording today.
And Steve, you knew that you'd be watching this movie. We kind of were excited to show it to you. We knew this would be on the docket when we started this series. Did you speak to anyone kind of in preparation, or did you watch any trailers or anything like that?
I'd never like to watch the trailers. I don't like to know what the movie's about. I have no problem like talking to people, finding out what they have to say about it. Unfortunately, Quentin wasn't at work this week, so I wasn't able to talk to him about this, but another guy that I work with, James, was telling me he had to go see it with his wife, who wanted to see it but was too scared to see it in the theaters alone. And he started to laugh because he said, there's a noise in this movie. And once you hear this noise, you're going to know. And I'm going to do it to you tomorrow. And it's going to freak you right out. And yeah, I heard the noise before I saw him this morning at work. So it you got me.
We all know what that noise is.
Yeah, we know he's talking about the cluck. And you know what the cluck makes me think of is the clapping hands in The Conjuring. It's kind of like iconic in a similar way.
Audio cue.
Yeah, and just so quick, right?
And also both of those very heavily featured in the trailer.
Yes.
So actually, it's a good thing for multiple reasons for you to have not watched the trailer, because the trailer for this movie was actually somewhat deceiving because Charlie was in it a lot.
Okay.
And as we come to find out, she's not in the movie.
And I don't remember, but it's almost like they crafted the trailer around like a creepy kid, which she certainly was.
Exactly, yeah.
As you all know, don't watch a lot of horror movies, and I find the trailers can sometimes like give away not the scares, but can you set them up a little bit? And for someone like me, I'd like to be completely terrified or creeped out or weirded out or whatever the effect of the movie is.
I think there's an argument to say no one should watch trailers really and just go into the movies, and then I think a lot of the time you get more out of it that way.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's fun to build anticipation too and be excited about what you've seen in the trailer, but I think in a lot of ways it can be a good thing. You know, Raw Dog the movie.
I just like hearing, ooh, yeah, that's a scary one. You're gonna like that one, and that's enough of a trailer for me.
Yeah, fair enough. And it's like, ooh, that's a scary one. You're not gonna like that one.
They know.
Oh, actually, I was saying to you guys that I was talking to my mom in the car yesterday and telling her what we were gonna watch last night and then record about tonight. And she said, oh, what's that one about? And so, because I can't summarize super well, I just explained the whole movie to her. And she told me that she had nightmares last night.
Oh, jeez. That's too bad.
Yeah.
It must be an evocative.
I must be a good storyteller.
Yeah. Exactly.
I remember saying at one point, and the husband's like, Annie, whoa, pump the brakes. I remember saying that.
I don't think he says anything as affirmative as that throughout this whole movie.
Anything as, as assertive
he
as that.
He kind of sits around looking forlorn, but who can blame him?
Mm-hmm.
So this comes to us from the A24 film studio, and you might not be too familiar with that one, Steve, because they do a lot of horror, a lot. And it's not all deep and dark like this one, like they made Megan, I believe.
Which is kind of goofy.
But up until Everything Everywhere All at Once, this was their top grossing movie. And it was made, I think, with a $10 million budget, something like that.
Wow.
So somewhat modest, especially when you got like Toni Collette in there and some established actors.
Yeah, actually, Alex Wolff is an established actor as well.
And Millie Shapiro in her own way,
she,
right?
Yeah, she was on Broadway, as I was telling you last night.
Got a Tony.
Oh, did she? For Matilda.
I think she did, but I should, I'll put a ding in there if I was correct.
Got the editor to check afterwards.
Yeah, we'll have our fact checkers get to it.
Jeeves.
Jeeves, fact check that, please.
You also haven't said the name of the movie yet.
Oh. Yeah, thank God you're here, Steve. We're here to talk about Hereditary, and this is a movie that Jenna and I really love. As much as we love it, it doesn't mean that we're always throwing it on every week or two, you know, because it is a bit of a tough watch, even if you like it.
Yeah, I probably won't watch this movie for a long time.
Yeah, I will never watch it again.
Bet you won't beat Steve.
I think that's fine. To be honest,
once was fine.
I don't know if I'll ever watch it again. I probably will.
Come on. It's good. It's so good.
Oh, no, I'm not. You know I know it's good. I might not want to watch it again unless I may be introducing a person to it.
Yeah, just continuing with your reign of terror.
Exactly.
Does the more you watch a horror movie like this, does it like numb you down over time? Like you watch a comedy, you laugh at the same jokes, or like do you get scared harder because you know this is one of your favorite ones coming up?
It probably would, but we don't watch them that often enough to do that, right?
The horror movie that I watched the most is Jaws,
You probably weren't that scared the first time you saw it.
I probably was, though, because I was a little kid.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Okay.
That was like a family movie night movie. What?
So basically, Steve's been living too fat and high on the hog, not being scared, and naturally we had to fix that.
It was time. Yeah, it'd been a couple months since our last one watching Green Room, which was incredibly gory. That was the scare on
that one was weird.
That was a trip for sure.
A very singular movie.
Mm-hmm. And then this one. So I knew Hereditary was coming. You guys had kind of mentioned to me before that this was one of the ones that you thought about, and I said it to a couple people, and everyone that I'd said it to was like, it'll screw you up. That movie's really weird, not just on like the jump scare and like the actual physical scary, but like the mental scary and the take home.
The pain.
It's like a disturbing movie.
Oh, man.
It's like a car that every car guy knows. Like, for example,
a Honda Civic.
Oh, yeah, of course. Like a Honda Civic.
Like a 57
Civic.
Chevy.
There you go. Yeah, something like that.
And you're just going to know.
But this movie is just, it's an instant classic. Not to say everyone loves it. Everyone knows it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, oh, Hereditary. Yes, of course. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. We'll get into our recap a little bit.
Yeah, and we'll have to jump right into it because
it's a lot of content.
John and I were discussing, we each have a whole lot of stuff to discuss with regards to our areas of expertise.
There are papers and pages and binders. These people have done their work. They both had to watch the movie again alone this afternoon.
Yeah, there's a bulletin board.
So we start with just kind of the black screen with the obit on there. What did you guys think of that? Like that, it's nothing like that happens again with just writing across the screen and stuff. What did you think about that as the opening, Steve?
So I was assuming the date that the grandmother passed away would have been like very soon to when the movie would have like opened.
Mm-hmm.
And so I imagine at that time the closeness of the two of them probably seeing it in theaters really would have.
Oh, yeah.
Just dates being in such close proximity. No, it was an interesting obituary. And then the music started right off the bat. And I know I've said to you guys before, just like the scores in these horror movies are so perfect.
Right.
It's 3 seconds into this movie and my hair is standing up and all it is just a black screen and sound because it's just building already from the first.
That's true. It's like, I don't know how they stumbled onto it, but people know what a scary sound is. And it's just made by a violin or something.
It's these
but
like tones that are like, ugh.
Eerie.
Yeah, like you
and
say,
they're slow.
They make your hair stand up. They make your kind of, your hackles go up. Your shoulders are by your ears. Yeah.
And I didn't realize until this watch, just like the amount of loud droning score that this movie does have that totally sets the tone. I obviously just kind of absorbed it all at once before. Mm-hmm. So I really noticed that this time. And I liked it. I thought it was good storytelling. We get a little info about the grandma because they kind of parcel out the info about Ellen, the grandmother who died, quite a bit. We never get a big dump at any point. We get a little info about the grandma, like I said. Also, that comes from the obit, but then the next scene isn't the funeral. It's the weird, slowly turning shot in her workshop.
Right.
Where we see all the dioramas. And I'm pretty sure Steve said right away, he's like, well, dioramas are scary.
No, right off the hop. Doesn't matter what it is. They can be about something. It could be a park. It's still scary.
And I'm like, well, there's a lot of them in this movie.
Yeah, hold on to your butts.
And that's another thing this movie's full of like very much, I would call them unflinching shots mm-hmm. that last so long.
They do,
and
yeah.
creep really slowly. So yes. the first shot kind of zooms us right in and we go from dollhouse into real house. Mm-hmm. You know, Peter's sleeping, but it takes so long to really zoom in. And they really pace it so slowly. It's really interesting. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really interesting, too, because the diorama thing helps to get across, you know, that the family are like dolls almost. Mm-hmm. Like there's like outside forces that are controlling mm-hmm. them and they might not realize it or they might think they have all the autonomy that a regular person has, but they don't. Mm-hmm. And there's so I think things. That's pretty neat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pawns.
Indeed.
Yeah. The scene where they zoomed into Peter's room and eventually it was... from the diorama,
yeah,
stopped, turned into his room. The dad comes in to wake him up for the funeral. Mm-hmm. Just
really cool.
It was a neat shot, really neat it shot. Neat. Just the way that, yeah.
Not that you could enjoy it because all the music was creepy.
You were too scared.
Well, just and dioramas are scary.
My head's going already. Like, is the whole movie based inside one of these things? Are these people? Do they know that?
Like, are they literally dolls?
So immediately, and this is on my second watch, I think I was picking up on it a little more. Immediately, Steve, who is the dad, and he's a psychiatrist, he's kind of caretaking everyone. Mm. Peter is dead asleep in his bed, and he throws his suit on and is like, your mom's in the car, it's time to go. Mm-hmm. Right? So like right. No one's really ready. Charlie has slept outside in their really cool treehouse.
So mm-hmm. cool.
Right? Like yeah. it's
very cool.
It's like a little... kind of almost sauna shape, but just hung up in four trees.
Yeah,
super cool. And, you know, dad's kind of bollocking her too because it was freezing last night and you're out here, like, mm-hmm. I can see sun through the slats of this fucking building, you know, like you're going to catch your death, basically. He says, in fact, that's how you get pneumonia.
By the way, a psychiatrist is an MD. He should know better.
True that.
He's like, he is a medical doctor.
I would know. But then she says, that's okay.
I told you that last night. I hate that because he says... Oh, he's quite irritated with her. Says, Charlie, you can't do this. You can't sleep out here. You're going to catch pneumonia. And she says, that's okay.
He's so discordant.
What is that an answer to?
It yes. doesn't make sense as a reply.
Yeah.
And that is off-putting. Very off-putting.
Yeah. That girl was cast so perfect.
Yeah, Millie Shapiro. Yeah.
Thing about Charlie is she's never oriented to what everyone else is. She seems like at arm's length from whatever situation she's in. She's
yep.
just kind of like yep. kind of like moping around. You know yep, what I mean?
She's there.
She's behaving oddly.
She's there and everyone sees her and they interact with her, but there's not much of a two-way going
no,
on.
No.
So, Steve, would you prefer to babysit for the weekend, Charlie
yes.
or Samuel?
Peter? Oh.
Charlie or Peter?
No, Samuel. You remember him?
From Babadook?
The magician from the Babadook who screams man. In the car? Peter would be no problem.
Yeah.
No. He's like 17.
Smoke a J with him.
Honestly, I think Sam would probably be easier because the mom was the problem in the Babadook, wasn't it?
Mostly. He was a weird kid.
He was a weird kid.
Who kind of wound her up like crazy. Remember he was making a bunch of homemade weapons? He broke her kitchen window.
Yeah, no, that kid. Okay. Yeah. And Charlie. I couldn't.
I would babysit Samuel every time. Because I think that it would be about just keeping him busy and being okay with your house, maybe being a little bit of
and
a mess.
Knowing what I know now, not like a
good
demon
point.
Spawn.
Good point. Because Sam came good in the end. Yeah.
He was a good kid. He was just in a tough spot.
Wasn't possessed by anything.
not once.
Not once. It's not a thing.
And, you know, Sam could probably use a male role model.
Yeah.
And then we cut to the funeral and Annie's really struggling to deliver the eulogy, which again, I thought that was really good storytelling. Toni Collette, I'm going to rave about her performance through this whole thing because I that's one thing I love about this movie. It's laying the groundwork for the fraught relationship that she had with her mom. And it's also she plays really well a person who is trying to say nice things throughout the eulogy and also telling the truth about a
no,
few things
you can tell
too.
She was,
and
yeah, she
you
was
know
digging.
What I mean? She's trying to not shit on her mom, but she's also saying some things like she was private. She had private rituals, private anxieties. She might not like to have this many people here. Like it was really interesting.
I think, and I said this to you both last night when we were watching, I think that Toni Collette is an amazing actress. I think she's mm-hmm. like a generational talent. I think she's just fabulous. What a difficult situation that is to have someone who died and have that kind of complicated mm-hmm. Feeling around their death and to then try to eulogize them. And I think it's represented great because I think that I'd want to do it pretty similarly.
Yeah, you just hope that someone saying, are you...
You hope you have nicer things to say, but you might not.
Yeah, and you hope someone saying, are you Googlies would do the best that they could to say them properly, right?
Yeah. Or do you think I'm too stupid to know what a Yugoogly is?
A Yugoogalizer, one who speaks at funerals.
That's a Zoolander
reference. Zoolander reference, if
that,
you didn't
that
know.
That is my favorite comedy.
I can't do Ben Stiller, sorry.
You don't like Ben Stiller?
Nope.
What's not to like?
Okay, so I could like Dodgeball, I can tolerate him because he's in it, so but it's funny. Not like, I don't know, I'm sorry, I tried.
If he was like Cary Grant tall, he could have been a leading man for sure.
Who's Cary Grant?
Can we get a reference from 70s?
Is he the guy that gets chased by the plane, like in that really old movie?
Yes.
We get a more.
Arsenic you know, and old no lace, one you guys.
There hasn't been a single other tall person in the past.
Fine, Gregory Peck.
There, no. That's better. Now
that's
we're
like
into the 70s.
10 years later than Cary Grant.
Do you not know any basketball players?
Yao
Kareem
Ming.
Abdul-Jabbar.
If he was a Larry Bird type, then yeah, of course.
If he was a Larry Bird type, he could have been a leading man like Larry Bird. Now imagine Ben Stiller's face on Shaq's body. That's a leading man.
Okay, yes. If he Isn't was it? 7 foot tall. We've gotten the weeds here. So,
and we're not even deep into the movie yet.
No, not at all. The eulogy's happening. Charlie sat there clucking and drawing obscene pictures. Like, they just look creepy. They're not obscene.
That noise.
Isn't it creepy? It sticks
awful.
With you.
Doesn't it also seem to be maybe worse than it should be for a 13-year-old?
Ooh,
or do I just have...
It's better drawing? Than I could do, and I'm a 35-year-old, so I don't know.
Okay.
But it starts to decline. Like after you're not a kid anymore and then your art skills kind of start to go down.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough.
And her dad just closes her book.
Her dad, yeah. Like obviously it's something they've been through a lot. He just like shuts it. But to be fair to Charlie, she doesn't put up a fuss.
No, she doesn't at all.
She just doesn't really do much of anything.
No, but then exactly. So she doesn't put up a fuss, but then that's an odd
She's
kid
just
thing.
Kind of aloof or vacant.
Vacant, right? Yeah, for sure.
And that's what I have here. Like, I just found her so discordant from everyone else. And that puts me on edge. I don't like that kind of thing when something doesn't fit.
It's the same problem we have with the creepy kid in The Ring, which we discussed almost in exactly the same way.
Yeah, what I do want to hurt people. And you're like, well, that's not right. That's not the way it's supposed to be.
The one thing I was thinking about the whole family, none of them feel like they're related to each other. The way the husband and wife interact, like, kind of coupley, but like,
yes,
the siblings... don't interact like they're like friends or siblings, and the mom towards both of the kids is, I don't know, they just, none of them seem like they're a family.
That's a good, they're fragmented. I think that's a huge problem that they've got.
And I think that actually there were moments, but it's just they're so few and far between, but there were moments when I thought that I really liked the way that Annie and Steve were interacting, and there was like,
it was comfortable.
There was like a moment when I thought that Annie was parenting Charlie well.
Not Peter.
And that's about it. No, not
Ooh,
Peter.
Yeah.
Which is, so hard to watch as a parent. Like,
So they're doing some scene setting here, but one of the things, so it'll throw these very strange things that don't make sense until the end, but it's not afraid to throw them in.
And like linger on something. And you say, why is that important that I'm looking at that?
Why did they show me that? Right. Mm-hmm. So one of the things is this woman who is a funeral goer, and she's like spreading oil across Ellen's dead lips. Yeah. You know what I mean? And they show it, they linger on it. Like you said, they don't kind of have it as a hidden feature in the back. Mm-hmm. And you're just like, that was weird.
I'm still trying to figure that out.
Right. And then they cut to Charlie, who's eating chocolate. And this is more just really good scene setting really quick because they're like, there's not nuts in that, are there?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And she's constantly eating chocolate.
She is.
She's like your son in that way.
And the, yes, well, whenever you're
when
around.
I'm there, every time I see him,
whenever,
he's eating chocolate.
Whenever Uncle John's
that
around.
I gave him a piece of.
It always happens that way. And also the creepy man staring at Charlie and grinning.
The guy
that
smiling.
Was a smile.
Oof. Right? Isn't that, he's got those like pensioner dentures that are just white as anything.
Nice.
And he's
crisp
staring.
Ears.
Yeah, jeez.
He looks like Max Headroom if you.
Yes, he sure does.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. Yeah, he's got like done up bleach blonde hair with dark roots or
another
something.
Sick
eh?
He looks awful.
Yeah, another
You're killing
super
it. You're
relevant.
Getting every generation of reference here.
Yeah.
Like we're almost ready to make our way into the 80s.
That is, you know, the 80s, I think.
It wasn't 70s?
No, that was 80s.
Oh, God. I'm so embarrassed.
Yeah, cut that.
Yeah, Jeeves.
Cut him out of the podcast. Jeeves.
Cut that guy out of the podcast.
He's like, that'll take some work.
Oh my God, we're totally going on Fiverr.
How's the Patreon doing?
Still pre-contemplative.
We're pre-contemplative. That's what I was going to say.
Therapy term.
Yeah, that's okay. A therapy term,
yep,
Steve.
Right over my head.
So if you were a man who everyone around you thought you were really struggling with some issues,
yep,
but you weren't ready to even think about going to therapy, mm-hmm, you would be pre-contemplative.
So is that not everyone?
It would be. No, like if I had an openness and had considered going to therapy, I'd be contemplative. I'm okay. Thinking about it, right?
So aren't we all before thinking of something?
Yeah, well, at some point we all are.
At some point
kidding. It's like, where are they in their journey towards therapy or, mm-hmm, or doing therapy or not? Mm-hmm. Or are they open to it?
We typically use the term as it relates to substance use and treatment.
Are they open to thinking about, mm-hmm, addressing their addiction? And a lot aren't, right? And,
oh, yeah. People are often pre-contemplative because they say, no, I like it.
Hell no. I like doing drugs a lot.
I like it. A lot of people don't want to accept that it might not be good for them because it feels good to them.
Right. Or that they have a problem and they can recognize an alcoholic and that's, mm-hmm, not them, or who, mm-hmm, knows, right?
Or do you know what it is a lot of the time? Cannabis use for people with psychotic disorders. Mm-hmm. That's something that I've come across a lot.
And I think the dangers of cannabis are sometimes downplayed, not by everybody.
I would argue more strongly that they are often downplayed.
I think because you can't OD on it, and even alcohol you can, you know.
Oh, so alcohol you can kill yourself real good with. Yeah. You can't kill yourself with cannabis, but you can really fuck yourself up.
Yep. So another thing too, I don't know if you guys like what you guys think about this, but there's clearly a good reason dad's constantly hectoring them to take their shoes off. Like, why do they keep bringing that up? Do you think?
I'm sure there's a deeper reason, but I just figured it was reinforcing the idea that he's running the household and keeping things in order.
What do you think, Steve? Did that
Did
stick
you see
out?
The beautiful hardwood floors?
Oh, beautiful.
The beautiful home.
You don't want to scratch those
and
things
super
up.
Super well appointed, but they're American.
That's true. Americans love wearing shoes inside.
So as Canadians, we're all like, of course you take your shoes off. Yeah. Why the hell wouldn't you?
You step it's in the snow by the door in your socks.
Yeah. Yes, that's what that's for.
And
I don't
right
get,
out of your outhouse, probably.
And I'm sorry, you're trying to keep your fucking house clean and you're wearing your shoes from outside on the couch? It makes zero sense.
My American grandmother, who was born just outside of Detroit, she wore shoes in the house.
Yeah, well,
it did
she's
trickle
crazy.
Down, thank God. Yeah, she's dead. She died of shoes in the house.
But, you know, you go to a Canadian house party, right?
And there's thousands
there's
of shoes.
There's a mountain of shoes there.
God, yeah. I remember one time somebody stole one of my shoes.
Oh, no.
And then it's a trickle-down effect because you're leaving with two shoes, right? So you just grab two other shoes and leave it for the next person. So it's just, it sucks.
Cascading shoe theft.
Yeah,
my
bad.
Dad used to say that about going to house parties like it in his university days because everyone was wearing the same kind of like work boots. And he said that when you were the last one to leave the party, you left with the worst boots.
Yep.
Like
the most beat up Timberlands.
Yeah, it wasn't like, you know, your boots necessarily. It was just the worst boots.
So yeah, dad's getting them constantly to take their shoes off and that sort of thing. And I was just like, interesting. But I was also wondering if it's meant to inform. And like we said, these films have to do things fast, right?
Oh, certainly. Yeah.
If it's meant to inform that Steve is the ordered one. He's the one who's trying to impose order on this family,
okay,
right? Mm-hmm. Even when things really come off the rails, that's kind of his role.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk about family dynamics a little bit, but in that situation, he's the one who's always trying to kind of get order going on in the house. And I'll point out a few examples as we go. But in a situation like that, if it's his role in the family, he must have felt a lot of pressure, mm-hmm, right? Because everything was kind of falling apart.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it's sticking to the little things, you know, putting on a fresh face of makeup, even though your life's not going too great.
No, never a reason not to put on lipstick.
Yeah.
Like my grandmother would always say.
Jenna did mention that for someone in deep grief and complicated grief,
Toni
Collette is quite
great.
Well appointed, mm-hmm, up until the end. But then Steve mentioned,
you know, you're never too busy to put on some lipstick.
It never hurts to look good.
Yeah.
Right? So, is that what did you say your grandma said?
Yeah. Nice. A housewife of the 50s, if that says anything for us.
And that's the shoe-wearing one? Is that
the shoe yes, one? The American one.
Oh, it sounds like an interesting lady.
Wearing shoes and lipstick all the time.
All the time.
And nothing else.
Whoa.
Oh, hello. Can confirm, Steve.
That's the most noteworthy thing about his grandmother.
Jeez. We... We see Annie working. So Annie is a sculptor, a miniaturist.
Yeah, a miniature artist.
Miniature artist. She's full-sized, but her work...
But her art is miniature. She's average height.
She's one of those miniature artists. Oh, yeah, she makes miniatures. And I found Steve's pretty supportive of her work. He goes in, oh, still toiling away at the hospice.
Yeah, see, that's something that I liked, that I thought was a positive interaction between them, because it also looked like maybe he had a pill in his hand. So I don't know if she's medicated as well.
Perhaps.
That was something, because he brought a glass of water and he had
you're probably right.
He had his hand like this, fingers together, as if he was holding a pill in that hand, and he went to go see her. So I'm wondering if she's medicated for something. Mm. But I thought that their conversation seemed good and natural, and he's thoughtful. So obviously she's been through the loss of her mom and the complicated grief thereafter. But then he's saying, yep, which of your dioramas are you working on?
Yep.
What's the timeline coming down to?
She has an upcoming art show.
Yeah.
She seems to make dioramas about meaningful and sometimes painful events in her life.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So we can learn a lot about her story by studying her dioramas, which is really cool. And then again, Steve is imposing the order. He's saying, got that art show coming up. How many weeks is it? Oh, about 7? No, 6.5. Okay, hey, that's coming up, right?
And I think that, as you say, lends to the idea that he's the ordered one. And But I also think it shows that he's tuned in. He knows which of her dioramas she's working on.
Yeah.
He knows, he's attentive. That's what I'm trying to say.
Tell me about your day, and he wants to know about
her. And then he remembers it, and he uses it to ask her how she's doing. And so I think that's very helpful.
Good point.
Especially because that can be really hard when you have a spouse and you're in two very different jobs. Mm-hmm. I find that can be really tough.
Oh my God. Yeah. Do you talk to your wife much about cars?
I talk at her about cars.
But then every now and then, is she like coming back from the store and she's like, I picked up that lime flavored motor oil because I remember you talking about you really like it.
She knows I love it. Yeah, she plays nice every once in a while.
Exactly.
Oh, that's a cool car. And my wife's a baker. She does a lot of baking. And same thing, try to show interest in whatever the other person's doing.
That's a little more in the middle, right? You're a good cook. You bake.
Yeah.
You know, so you have the know-how, right? If you were talking to me about cars, I would just kind of let it wash over me because I don't know what the hell I'm talking about, right?
That's the way it was with Dad, I felt like, with his job.
Database administering.
Exactly. We'd be like, so how was work today? Okay.
Oh, it was a big problem because all the zeros were over here and the ones were over here.
Oh, should have been there.
God, the ones where the zeros meant to be.
Yeah, it should have been 0010011. But it wasn't.
He's like, so and then I say to my him. Buddy, I say to my buddy, 1101001. Am I right?
Oh, and we laughed.
Oh,
and we laughed.
Yeah, we have fun. We have fun.
And my mom and dad went upstairs.
Yes.
Nick and grandma.
Is that a Family Feud answer?
It sure is.
Something you don't want to see? Nick and grandma.
It is a Family Feud answer.
Nick and grandma.
Nick, huh?
They're so good. They set them up so bad. You know what one of my favorite ones was? And it was in the lightning round. And it was like something that would follow the word pork. Oh, you pine. One of the guys.
You pine.
Something you forget to bring to work. Pickles. Oh my God. Oh, there's some gems.
Yeah.
I thought, okay, nice. He's supportive of her work, but he's also trying to keep her on a timeline. Maybe she's one of those artists who's kind of, you know, just really free form and not so worried about some of those details, like staying on task and time and that sort of thing.
I had a good friend who was a professional visual artist, and she would say all the time how difficult it was to try to be both professional and creative.
Sure.
And I've experienced that because I do a little bit of creative work of like drawing and stuff like that. And I'll usually be doing it for friends and stuff. But sometimes people pay me and ask me to do a certain thing.
By a certain time.
And sometimes I say, oh, perfect. I know just what to do. And you feel like, oh, I'm inspired to do this thing. And you do it really well and you're excited about it. And other times I'm like, oh, crap. I don't know what I'm going to do for that.
When you don't have an idea, that's the killer, right?
And it just doesn't feel good.
So, Steve is really checking in on and caretaking everyone. Because he starts there, he goes to Annie, and then he also ends up going to Peter opens his door. Peter's in bed. Peter's in bed a lot.
Mm-hmm. Does a lot of sleeping.
You know?
Teenager, though. That's fair.
Yeah, I know. I felt like they were kind of getting
it. It was nighttime.
Yeah, it was clearly dark out. He had his guitar, too. He moved his guitar when Dad came in. And he's like, hey, buddy, you okay? You know, and Peter is like, you know, yeah, actually. Mm-hmm. I mean, he wasn't close with his grandma. That was clear.
Yeah, you could feel that.
People put a little too much pressure on that kind of thing 100%. To feel or act a certain way sometimes, you know? Like, you can be okay. It's okay.
And I think that Steve reacted completely appropriately because he kind of...
completely agree.
Yeah, kind of shrugs and laughs and says, yeah.
He's like, yeah, I get it.
I get that.
He knows.
And they also all know that she was a difficult person, right?
Yeah.
And then, and they actually kind of, it's very small, but they kind of joke with each other. They do a little sneer.
There was a little bit of a little chuckle. Like, yeah, I totally get where you're coming from, you know?
They have a little chuckle together and then...
It was his mother-in-law. You know,
and then they say I love you mutually, go to bed, right? I think they both say it.
I think so, and you gotta love that represented on film. Adult dad, almost adult child.
I love you, male and male.
You know, love to see that.
I talk to my husband all the time about how important that is. I just think it's so important because, like, when they're little kids, they're so comfortable expressing their emotions, and as a mother of a son, I just don't ever want that to go away, that he doesn't feel comfortable expressing his emotions anymore. And I know that it's going to be augmented by social factors as he ages. That's just natural.
Yeah, he might not love you at some point.
Well, that's...
Don't forget that. Don't forget it.
But I just always want them to feel comfortable. And you and I have talked about this before, about the idea...
You just don't want to stop it.
No, the idea of losing that closeness with your child is like a terrifying thought.
Of course.
Yeah. So I think that it's wonderful represented. We probably cut this out, but have you seen the thing about, like, both David Beckham and Tom Brady got a lot of flack for
kissing their sons on the mouth?
Kissing their sons on the mouth. Their children on the mouth. And I was like, what the fuck is wrong with people? I'm like, these are, like, healthy people with, like, close relationships with their children.
Yeah.
Oh, I think it's so fucked up when people are like...
My dad comes and visits me at the shop. I give him a hug and say I love you on the way out.
Of course.
Yeah. I think that's perfect. I think that's how it should be. Yeah.
We're also a hugging family, which spills out.
Not every family is.
No,
huggers.
And it's fun when you run into someone who isn't, because you can feel it in that hug. You can feel that they're not a hugger.
We get a scene as well where Annie's checking in with Charlie. Right, and Charlie's in bed. She's all like bundled up. She's wearing almost like a sweatshirt.
She's wearing a Patagonia fleece.
Yeah. And you know, she's saying, again, just some really weird stuff. Like, Annie's trying to talk to her, and they're kind of having the same conversation, but not really, right?
No, and so she's Annie makes some missteps.
Well, she says, you know, you were grandma's favorite. And then she says, well, she wanted me to be a boy. You know, that's really interesting. And then, you know what's interesting, too? So we'll unpack a lot of stuff as we go. But one of the things that this movie
really... This is spoilerific. We're going to, from the get-go.
Please, spoilers like crazy. Here's your warning. This movie is really about, like, generational themes, generational trauma, definitely. Mm-hmm. And Annie says, oh, I used to be the biggest tomboy, right? And I hated everything. I hated dresses. And to me, I'm like, okay, she was seeking Ellen's approval as a child. And that's so cool. Like, that's just really interesting for them to include. So trying to find her place in the family when Ellen, the grandma, was only about boys because she was seeking a boy.
Was only about her son, Charles.
Because she wanted a boy to be born, right? So it's like, that's so cool. They don't ever go in and say, oh, and here's why. And you just kind of read into it. And it's like, yeah, she tried to be tomboyish. Interesting.
God, I was way too busy being terrified to pick up any of this stuff. You guys are... See why you do it.
When you're watching Steve.
It's our job.
And it's our full-time job.
When you
are watching these, Steve, and I think you've kind of mentioned it, because there's more than one way to kind of go about it.
More than one way to skin a cat.
And more than one way to crack a nut. To bust a nut, sorry.
There's plenty. John, there's plenty of ways to bust a nut, John.
There's certainly.
Yeah, can you confirm?
Ask his grandma. And are you... Is your brain thinking, like, there's a cabinet there, something's going to come out of the cabinet? She just walked into an old folks' home, something's going to happen. Like, are you constantly, like, trying to or trying not to think about what's next?
I'm trying to get ahead of the scare once it's there that I'm not as scared.
You're prepared?
Yes. Like, a couple...
Sounds exhausting.
Honestly, I can't lie to you guys. There was a couple times last night in the movie where I had to, like, watch the bottom right corner where you kind of, like, get the whole thing. But I'm like, I can't stare right at this.
They're too powerful.
Yeah, there are
times.
It's
like looking at an eclipse.
There are times in this movie where you're slowly meant to kind of notice something in the corner, right? And they don't zoom in on it. They just let you see it, and that's like a creepy experience. I remember nudging you in the theater when we saw one of those scenes and being like,
because some of them,
there she is.
Yeah, they're like so darkly lit.
Jeez.
And I know the scene you're talking about, and that's it. They're just there. She doesn't do anything.
Right from the beginning,
there's nothing. Oh, I've just goosebumps,
the
guys.
The audience, there's
Steve raises his arm and show his goose flesh.
So I find that Annie, I feel like she's really trying.
Yeah, what did you think were her missteps?
When she's parenting. So I think when she says, you know, you never cried as a baby.
Yeah.
I think that's an odd thing to say. And it almost, I don't know, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but it almost seems like an accusation or something because like babies are supposed to cry.
Right. And so it's kind of like, othering Charlie and she is very different.
It's like saying you were weird from the get-go, which like from the moment you were born, which would make me uncomfortable and I'd overthink that, you know?
Yeah.
And I just think, what she brings it around to is saying, you can cry if you want to, it might make you feel better. And so I think that is a good message,
Fair enough. She
goes about it in a weird, awkward way. And I feel like she does that with Peter all the time, too.
Well, I think Annie's not good at relating to the people in her family. And maybe that's new.
Not.
It could have built up over time. But she's not good at engaging with them. She's not good at meeting people on their level and understanding where they're coming from. She seems to dismiss people too quickly or to have her own idea about what they're trying to say or what they're like, even. But I thought that was really interesting to watch play out too. And when you're doing that stuff too, you could almost send the wrong message in another way where it's like, you know, you've always been such a good kid and you always do the right thing and you put pressure on unintentionally. Mm-hmm. So it's like, oh, you're so great. You never cry. You never give me trouble. You're that kind of thing. Right.
That's
and then
like
you accidentally put pressure. I don't like, it's like inside out one.
I was going to say it's like in Modern Family where they say that to Alex that, they say you're like a self-cleaning oven.
Yes.
Like we never need to take care of her.
You're our
set
it and forget it. But in Inside Out 1, they talk about, Riley's always been our happy girl and we need you to be happy because we're doing this move and it's different. And like they end up putting pressure on her, right?
It's especially difficult when you talk about an emotion, not a behavior.
Fair enough.
You
need
to feel
this way.
Yeah, you can't impose a feeling on someone.
Good point.
It's one thing to say, you know, you need to be strong or, you know, I need you to be, I need you to be really obedient for this next couple of days while we're doing something difficult.
Tell my wife that all the time.
Yeah. And how does she respond?
Yeah, that way probably wouldn't work. Well.
Yeah.
And as she's speaking with Charlie, we get some of the kind of creep factor in terms of the occult where we see the word satiny written on the wall, and that's satiny, S-A-T-O-N-Y, not satiny as in like a nice satiny
set of pajamas.
So Steve, what did that, like, is that something you really honed in on, like what the fuck was that?
Yes, I remember asking you guys. I was reading it and I couldn't I saw what it said, but it wasn't, I was wondering if it was a word or something I was missing, but just that
not a word,
it,
you know.
No, it was kind of gibberish but kind of not. It was it was bizarre. But to see a little kid scribble on the wall, not the weirdest thing.
Okay, but was it little kid scribble, though? Because I think maybe it was the grandma had written them. Because it looked, they were in other rooms, too. Like, it was in, Annie's room or something.
Right. Right. Yeah, so we'll, you know, obviously, like we said, spoilers. But I think we can blame the cult for those.
Spell casting.
Yeah, they're essentially, like, summoning words. Mm-hmm. And, again, the guy who did the deep dive, like, they're real. They're in grimoires that are real and associated with witchcraft, And so, Steve, at this point, did you have enough information where you were pretty sure the movie was going in a supernatural direction?
No.
You wondered if it might be all human horror kind of thing?
Yeah.
I think that's fair.
Yeah, like, it's tough to know the tone at this point, right? Other than it's just kind of low, down in the dumps kind of thing. Mm,
heavy, yeah.
There was the necklace that had the logo or whatever, the pendant. Mm-hmm. Seen that a couple times through the movie, so obviously that was a... This must mean something. Everything in these horror movies seems to. So,
so there's
big on symbols. Yeah.
A necklace with the symbol, and Annie wears one, as did Ellen. Mm-hmm. There's a scene as well where Annie goes up and she's searching through Ellen's things. So Ellen spent some time living with them before she went into hospice, right? And I think she even died in their home. I thought it said that on the obit, but I could be wrong. Mm. And she's going through some of the boxes, and she finds a letter. from Ellen. Mm-hmm. And it said, basically, my dear sweet Annie, so many things I couldn't tell you. Please don't hate me. Don't despair your losses. So our rewards will outweigh the sacrifice, basically, right? And that was really interesting because I imagine that would be a very... That Annie wouldn't have heard her mom speak that way too often.
Like
her.
Saying, my dear sweet Annie.
Yeah, that was a very loving.
Very warm and loving, yeah, right? Absolutely. So I think she was a little surprised to be reading that. And it's very confusing too. Like, what does she mean?
The heck does she mean?
What are our rewards? What were our sacrifices, basically, right?
And Annie, in her expression and behavior, you could tell is resentful of this message. And she scoffs at it.
Oh, like a little too little too late, essentially.
Well, and like, I just don't buy it. Yeah.
Yeah. And then as she's going to turn off the light, we see the first image of a ghost, essentially, where we see Ellen in the corner.
Oh, right.
It almost looks like an after image, right? Like when you, what is it? If something was super bright and then you close your eyes and you can still see it.
Oh, sure. Yeah. And did you find that a pretty scary point in the movie, Steve? It kind of comes out of nowhere.
Yeah, no, it sure did. And like, she wasn't like a ghost grandma or like look weird. She was just standing.
No, she was just there.
Just normal, standing in the corner.
In a dark corner.
Dark corner.
Wearing her yellow, as she always does. I think after seeing that, she's like, oh shit. And she turns the light on and it's gone, right? Yep. But then she's creeped out. She goes and turns around her diorama right to the camera. And it was one of Ellen coming in to try to breastfeed Charlie.
Very strange.
Like, that's fucked up.
Yeah.
Annie said... She would always want to feed you as a baby.
But did you guys take that literally, or did you take that as it was a message, it was a metaphor that Annie was making that like, oh, my mom was so overbearing with Charlie, it might as well have been this? Or did you take it like Ellen literally tried to breastfeed her at the age of like 70?
Good question. I took it literally, but I was like, how?
Right? Like that would
never
work.
And Annie, how did you let her do that?
Yeah, like I can't see Annie even entertaining that, but I could see her kind of developing this resentment towards her mom and finding her way overbearing, way over the top with Charlie, where she's not even comfortable having her in her life entirely.
See, the feeding for me, we didn't breastfeed our daughter. So the feeding to me, I'm just like, oh, I was going to give her bottles. Like my parents loved feeding my daughter. Like no problem. Like I'm like, yeah, that's normal.
That's true. Fine. Grandparents do love feeding the baby when they have a chance.
My grandparents and my wife's grandparents would love feeding our daughter.
Exactly. It's like a nice time to spend and you know you can make them happy.
Yeah. So that part I'm like, okay, I don't think you mean it that way.
Yeah.
The way I'm thinking of it, that it's like a nice thing.
But that was a creepy image, that diorama. Yeah, right?
Like, and like, why do you make that? Like, you don't have to.
Can you imagine your wife is up there making stuff like that?
Yeah.
You don't have to do that.
Nice work, babe.
Yeah.
Can you have it done in 7 weeks?
Yeah. You want to know exactly what your mom's tit looks like? Hold on.
Oh, man. You captured her breast beautifully. I remember. Yeah. That's exactly
how
they
areolas.
Looked.
Yep.
That's exactly how they looked. And the dioramas just are a very creepy element, and the movie would really be missing for not having them in there.
And they're
very
well done. Like,
yeah,
they
look amazing.
They're
very
cool. They're high quality. If they're going into a museum and a gallery, I guess they're probably, of the highest qualities.
Yeah, that's true. She's got a big art show that's wholly focused on her, right? So that's got to be a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
And they have a beautiful home. He's a psychiatrist, but, you know. Charlie was in class as well in the next scene. She's just in class and she's making like one of her homunculus statues that she's always making.
Which she always is making.
Right? And it's out of like matchboxes and pieces of plastic. And the teacher basically says, well, is your quiz done? Let's put the toy away until it is. And she's like, okay.
I actually think the teacher handled that pretty well.
Me too. It wasn't a power struggle.
She didn't snatch it out of her hand or anything. She just says, yeah, do the test first and then you can do that.
But here's a question I had though. I'll ask you guys this. So she's asked to stop. She doesn't put up much of a fight. Do you two have the sense that she's in a special needs classroom?
No, I didn't.
No, you didn't, eh?
No.
I wondered that myself. There's a few things. So one of the things is that one of Annie's dioramas that never really gets explained is the preschool. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, I'm thinking about like, okay, a potentially painful experience at preschool or something. Mm-hmm. Like, what was
kids.
It like for Charlie to be at preschool? Did she get a diagnosis of some kind? Was she very unlike the other kids? But I don't know that I have a ton of evidence to say that she might have been in a special needs classroom other than that Charlie doesn't seem to blend in well with her typically developing peers, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering, but yeah, you know, they certainly didn't do anything to have that come across, right? It would be subtext, I suppose.
And while they're sitting there writing the quiz, smack a pigeon, which is, I don't feel like they run into windows that often. A pigeon.
Not around here.
They're pretty good.
Well, yeah, they live in cities. That's their whole thing.
They live at places with like skyscrapers and all that. Yeah. That's true.
This pigeon absolutely kamikazes itself right into the window with such force just from the sound that you're pretty confident it's dead.
Oh, yeah. There's blood on that window.
And and Charlie logs that away in her noggin.
And she also eyes some scissors. That are on the desk. Yeah, so that was like a sudden bang, too, that when you're already tense because you're watching a horror movie and they do that, you're like, ah, man.
I was waiting for the scissors to get up and stab the teacher. Like, that's how I watch these movies. Like, I have no idea what's happening.
Could have happened.
I mean, it is a bit like Chekhov's scissors, right? they're showing them they got to do something.
You got to do something with them. That's true.
And she does.
And then we cut to Peter. I think they go to the same school. They do.
Yeah, maybe there's like a middle school in the high school type thing because she's 13.
Right. And they're talking about the Oracle, which was is a Greek tragedy, correct? And the hero Heracles. And they're asking, so everything was predestined, preordained. Mm. He was on rails. There was nothing he could do to change his fate. Does that make it more or less tragic? Mm-hmm. Because he had no choice, right? And some of the kids are weighing in, and one of them says, well, he ignored all the signs that were right there in front of him in his face. He ignored them all. And another saying, you know, the characters had no hope and they were pawns. Mm-hmm. Therefore, it's more tragic. Mm-hmm. And it's like those are directly foreshadowing, obviously, what's going on with this family. Right. So that's pretty cool.
But not in a clunky way. Very smooth.
No, it could have easily happened in any classroom in America. Right. We're warm blooded Americans. We're going to talk about the Oracle.
Yeah.
It's our God given right to do that. And like we actually do spend a bit of time in that classroom. He's also scoping out the butt of Bridget, who sits in front of him, and they kind of quickly establish that he has a bit of a crush.
Even though a butt sitting in a chair doesn't usually look great.
When you underestimate what does it for a 17-year-old boy.
When you're a 17-year-old warm-blooded male, doesn't necessarily take much butt sitting anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Nice bus ride, anything.
Oh, the dirty bus.
Oy.
Hey, did you see the way she was filling out that bus seat?
Couldn't, the whole bus
couldn't
seat.
Miss it, brother. Next, Charlie is finding that bird, which is sat nicely on a very well-trimmed hedge. It must be a nice school.
Probably is. Mm.
And she's cutting its head off with scissors.
Mm-hmm. Looks first, knows that she shouldn't.
Yeah.
Like does
or knows that other people think she shouldn't. True, right. She knows she wants to.
Knows she has to keep it covert. And
then put it in her pocket, I guess.
In her big oversized orange sweater.
I hated that too. Why is she dressed so weird?
Because she's a weird kid.
Yeah.
But also she's just emotionless.
Yeah.
Just like blank stare, cutting off this head, doesn't really care. And that's just very off-putting. When people...
Oh, yeah.
What do you call it when the affect doesn't match? You have a psychological term for
incongruent.
Yeah, when it's incongruent, that's a very off-putting experience, right?
Grinning when they shouldn't.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, people who have a nervous smile or something and you're like, oh, what's going on with that person? Right.
Yep.
As Annie's exploring the home a little bit, she walks into the grandmother's room and there's a weird triangle kind of painted or burnt or carved into the floor. Mm-hmm. And she ends up asking Steve to lock the door. Mm-hmm. Right.
Because she doesn't even want to set foot in there or be able to see in there.
I already know that's what Steve would do.
Oh, absolutely. I'm moving.
Yeah, it's already time to move. I would I could see myself doing that too.
Locking
it's like
the door?
If my mom just died, why do I want to be in there in the first place? I guess give it a little time.
Especially when you just saw her in the corner of your house.
Oh, well,
like
great
let's
point.
Extra lock that door.
That's a really good point.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they lock it with some old timey key. This is like an old house for sure. And Steve is with her and he's locking it for her, but then he gets a call from the cemetery. And we don't get much from this, right? But he's like...
And this is funny too. Why is Steve taking the call? It's Annie's mom.
Yeah, true. Probably just because he doesn't want to put her through it.
But it's just another moment of him being the...
True, yes. Yeah. He's the one doing everything on behalf of the family. You're right. And he's like, okay, what does that mean? Desecrated. Definitely a call you don't want to be getting from the cemetery.
Yeah,
that's an odd one.
Right? And also he probably knew what it meant.
The cemetery guy was probably so excited to use that word. He's like, oh my God.
It happened, guys.
They probably have a big binder, you know, like in case of this, like
in
he's
case
like
of desecration.
Reading from the script. Yeah, exactly. So he keeps it from Annie though.
He does. He says that it's billing stuff.
Yeah, it's just silly Billy. I'll tell you what, why don't I call
it's just
you
silly
back?
Silly Billy, you know.
just a silly Billy. You know how it is. You know how these fucking funeral homes are. Annie says she's going to go see a movie, which she does several times throughout.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Steve, would you go to a movie on your own?
Absolutely. Yeah.
I would too.
I have no problem with that. I go out to eat by myself. That's not something I've done often, but I'm going for me and not for the other person. I don't need to.
True. Yeah, true that.
It's nice to have company, of course, but.
Yeah, but if it's a movie that they might another person you know might not enjoy, then yeah, hell yeah, go yourself.
I wouldn't go see Hereditary by myself. That would not
either.
Be one.
Me no. either, to be honest. I used to go in university. There was a really cool little theater that I could walk to from my house. So I used to sometimes go do that. And it felt like kind of a nice thing I was doing for myself that I'd go walk to the theater and go see a movie by myself and felt like a nice thing
clear
to
your
do.
Head.
Was that the Coin Porn Theater?
Yeah,
right by your house. Go grab a coffee.
Felt like a nice thing I was doing for myself.
Yeah. It always does.
Yeah, Steve, would you go to a porn theater alone?
Not alone. No, I have standards.
You need company.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. What am I, some kind of creep?
Yeah. What am I, pervert?
What am I, weirdo?
Okay. So another big element of this movie too is Annie's attendance of a grief support group, right? For people who've lost loved ones. Why do you think she felt a need to keep that a secret from Steve? Because she keeps saying she's going to the movies.
Her husband's a psychiatrist, right?
Yes, yes, he
is. So I'm sure she's probably thinking, I should be talking to my husband about this. He may be the expert.
Honestly, that is the wrong notion completely, because no, you should not. But that's exactly what I was thinking. Mm. It would be like your wife taking the car to some other mechanic.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you'd be like, I could have sorted that out, no problem.
Yeah.
Right?
She's like, I just want it done and don't worry about it.
But your psychiatrist husband can't treat you.
No, and anyone should know that. Yeah. But, you know, I wondered the same thing. I wondered if she didn't want to somehow inadvertently offend him or she didn't want him to say, well, what are you doing? How was your treatment? Like, she thought he'd be a little too interested in it.
That's
or something.
That's what I wondered. Yeah. And she's, to me, I was wondering if she's like, I'm not even sure I'm going to stay. So I'm not going to tell him about it and then have him.
Make it a thing.
Yeah, and then have him be like, oh, why didn't you stay if she's not into it? She didn't want him breathing down her neck about it, what I wondered.
You're probably right. I think you're both right. And she does say, like, I'm really not into this kind of thing, too. She's a bit of a skeptic in terms of how helpful things like that can be in the first place. So probably was weird for her to be there. And the group puts her on the spot in a major way. Like, they were like, to our newcomers, anyone want to say anything? And she was like, no. And they're like, well, okay. And they just all stared at her.
Yeah,
and stayed staring at her. Not very subtle here, guys.
So then she gets into it, and she's laying a lot of backstory. Mm-hmm. They really helped to drive home the estrangement on and off from Ellen, the grandmother.
Yeah, for years that she and Ellen were estranged. Basically, it sounds like for the entire 4 years
that Peter was
intervening
born.
Between when Peter was born and when Charlie was born.
Exactly, exactly. And so there's just a lot there. And she really helps to kind of explain the way the relationship was. Then she says, well, you know, my mom kind of had a hard life. She said that Annie, her own father, had psychotic depression and starved himself to death. Mm-hmm. And she also says that her brother, Charles, had schizophrenia and killed himself, leaving a note blaming Ellen for trying to put people inside of him. Right. Mm-hmm. So attributing that to delusion at the time makes perfect sense. But, you know, as the film progresses, we find out maybe not so much. So I wondered if you wanted to unpack a couple of those terms. I think they're well used. You know, it wasn't something like, well, that doesn't make any sense.
No, they definitely do make sense. So I'll start with psychotic depression, because that is it's pretty much in the name.
Well, and I was wondering, would you be more likely to see like depression with effects or depression with something of psychosis?
So depression with psychotic features.
Features
is
okay.
Typically how a physician that I'm working with would phrase it diagnostically.
Sure.
But if someone, you know, from a different hospital was being a locum and came in and said psychotic depression,
everyone would know what
he or
she meant.
We're all the same thing here. Yeah,
yeah, for sure.
So it's just an episode of major depression with features of psychosis. So you're thinking potentially hallucination or delusion or disorganized symptoms and not within the context of bipolar disorder. So
and
it's,
not within the context also
or
of
another psychotic disorder
or
like
of a
schizophrenia.
Crisis, let's say. Like
no, even if they're in a crisis, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
But then you'd still say there's psychotic features.
And you'd still say depression.
I'm saying it's a major depressive episode.
Gotcha, yeah.
And then I'll talk about schizophrenia as well, okay? So this is an interesting one. And within this talk, because as I was saying to both Steve and to John, I felt like I had a lot to discuss in regards to my wheelhouse, which is like acute phases of psychiatric illnesses within the hospital setting in adults.
Exactly.
There's tons of this going on. And so within this discussion, I'm also going to take a little quiz break of nomenclature and quiz Steve and see.
Oh, great.
See some words that he might recognize.
He was cramming every medical term he could think of before it, but I bet, you know.
He was sleeping on the DSM-5 to get some things by osmosis in his sleep.
That would be a nice pillow height.
Yeah, it'd be a nice pillow height.
Wouldn't be a bad pillow height.
Otherwise, it would not be very nice.
The tragedy of the pillow is that you need 1.5. Mm. That's what's shitty about pillows. 2 is too much. 1's not enough.
Yeah, I usually do like a corner of my husband's on top of mine, and that's about it.
Betty loves that.
Oh, yeah, loves it. Okay, so schizophrenia is a psychotic disorder, chronic, with no identified cure, but many treatment options, characterized by positive and negative symptoms and disorganized symptoms. So actually, John, let's spin it to you. So when I say positive and negative symptoms, what comes to your mind?
I would think the presence of something and the lack of something.
Exactly. So what it refers to is things basically added on top of a typical experience and things removed from a typical experience. Right. So a positive symptom is something that the average person does not experience. So something like a hallucination or a delusion. A negative symptom is something that the average person does experience that this person is not. So this is potentially like a flattening of emotional expression on their face, for example.
Okay.
Or like a lack of motivation, which is called avolition, or anhedonia, which is an inability to experience joy or take pleasure in things. So those are some negative symptoms. And then disorganized symptoms are things, and this is in the name, but that they could be a typical feature that the average Joe on the street is experiencing, but they're not quite right in a person with schizophrenia or another psychotic disorder. So for example, disorganized dress is common. So you've got someone, for example, they're indoors and they're wearing their parka and 3 sweatshirts underneath it all the time. And this happens on my unit regularly.
Wow.
This disorganized dress. Yeah. And it's, so that's just another domain of symptoms within this disorder. So these people are more likely to die younger than the general population. There's a lot of comorbidities, and comorbidity is a word that means illnesses or disorders happening in conjunction with another or at the same time as another. They're more likely to die younger than the general population. And so there are some things that are often comorbid could be things like cardiac conditions, diabetes, and a lot of it comes down to lifestyle. That when your brain is so severely affected by an illness like schizophrenia and your behavior is so severely affected, it winds up affecting every domain, right?
Sure. Right.
So this person, for example, maybe they're not showering. Maybe they're not eating. Maybe they're not taking their hypoglycemics, for example. They're not taking their diabetes medications. They're not taking their medications. So these things are pretty common and we see them all the time. And it's a real challenge to treating these people effectively, because a lot of the time you're trying to treat the underlying psychotic illness or the underlying psychiatric problem, but on top of it are all these other problems going on at the same time that are muddying the water and making it harder for this person to just function well in any way. Cognition is also affected, including memory, concentration. So a lot of these people, if they are potentially like in university, for example, or they're in high school, that's something that you might notice in the prodromal phase, which is prodromal refers to the phase where there are very subtle symptoms starting to crop up before they could actually meet the criteria for a diagnosis of schizophrenia. So for example, a man is more likely to have his first episode of psychosis in his teens or 20s, a little bit younger for men, versus women are usually their 20s to 30s. It might be, say, like a 17-year-old boy, and his grades are starting to slip. He's not spending as much time with his friends. He's a little bit more isolated. He's not quite acting himself. That's something that you might start to see in the prodromal phase of an illness. Etymology break.
God, the amount of words you guys have. These are all $10 words, man.
Incredible. I take some pleasure in using nomenclature. I do. Are you ready for the etymology break?
Yeah, man.
Okay.
Do I look like a guy who's not?
So schizophrenia comes from the Latin split mind, leading some to believe that schizophrenia means split personality. Mm-hmm. So schiz as in a schism.
Okay.
And phrenia, as in head, brain. Kind of fun. I like Latin.
But is split personality a thing, or is that just a...
Yes. So, yeah, actually, we'll talk about that later.
Okay. But you're right,
yes. It is a diagnosis. It's not called that, but yeah. Okay, so some risk factors. Here we are talking about hereditary.
Yeah.
There are genetic risk factors. It runs in families, but it's not as simple as a single gene, a single cause, or a direct, you have it, you have it.
It's not, but it is one of the most strongly heritable.
So let me tell you about it. So twin studies are often some of the best evidence of the heritability of any given illness. Mm-hmm. So like identical twin studies are like a tip-top research modality for these kind of things. And so if one identical twin has schizophrenia, the other has a 1 in 2 chance of having schizophrenia. Mm-hmm. That's incredibly high, obviously. Mm-hmm. If they are non-identical, so as genetically similar as just any other siblings, the chance goes down to 1 in 8.
Oh, wow.
So it goes to show that the genes play a very large role.
Yes. There's also some structural brain differences which have been assessed, but that's a little bit subtler and there's not anything that points directly to if your brain looks like this, you're going to have schizophrenia and vice versa. Neurotransmitters play a large role, which is why the medications that we give, which augment neurotransmitters and the levels of neurotransmitters, they help. So we know that they play a role, but it's the kind of thing where there's a lot of evidence for the efficacy of psychiatric medications, but we don't, in a lot of cases, have really good evidence for why it helps. So we know that it helps, but we don't always know exactly what about it is making the difference.
Wow.
Yeah.
And a lot of psychiatric meds are like that,
a lot of
right?
psychiatric meds are like that, yeah.
Yeah, and it's not as simple as, oh, serotonin is the feel-good
exactly.
drug.
You oh, and know, people
or,
love
or dopamine
to,
is the feel-good drug or things like that.
People love to talk like that. Or oxytocin is the feel-good drug and say, give me a hug. Do you feel that oxytocin? Yeah.
Even though, like, they do play a role in those things.
They do, but people just, like to oversimplify
it. It's so complicated.
Right. It's so incredibly complicated. So anyway, so all of those things, pregnancy and birth complications, which impact brain development. So we're talking about, like hypoxia or not having enough oxygen around the time of birth and during pregnancy also impact it. So that it contributes to the brain structure argument, right? That there's like, if you have certain damage to your brain, it makes it more likely that you're going to have schizophrenia.
Wow.
Also drug use, cocaine, cannabis, LSD, amphetamines in particular. So here, guys, cannabis is not a benign substance. Talk to your kids about it. And if they are below the age of around 20 or so, talk to them about it pretty seriously. Because your brain is doing a lot of developing into your early 20s. And heavy cannabis use in your like young teens can be very dangerous.
Yeah, but like in my teens, I was also trying to develop into a rad guy.
Well, and
what am I supposed to do about that?
You got to thread the needle.
It. He did it.
I did it.
He did it.
Listener,
he did in fact do it. So
mission accomplished.
So this is what Annie is saying that her brother died of is schizophrenia. Right. And so he died by suicide, which would be a common, like a common way to die with schizophrenia.
Do you die from schizophrenia or do you do?
Not directly.
It's not like.
Well, I guess it depends on how you want to look at it.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
So like, remember she was talking earlier about someone suffering significantly with schizophrenia also isn't likely taking care of themselves
absolutely.
Can that lead to death? Yes. Can it lead to homelessness? Yes. Can it lead to a whole bunch of social problems that can kill you?
And what she's describing is actually quite direct, right? Because she's saying he had a delusion that his mom is putting people into him.
Right.
Yeah.
And then he killed himself as a result of that. So you could say that is him dying of schizophrenia pretty much on its face, right? He had a supposedly delusional belief which led him to feel he needs to kill himself.
Yeah. And some people will even sometimes say, in regards to suicide, how did that person die? They died of mental health or they died from or due to mental health, right? You take it to mean suicide in most cases, but it's like making the link between suicide and mental illness, which is obviously incredibly strong.
It's also fairly common. We've talked about hallucinations before and that the most common sensory domain for them to occur in is auditory. And with auditory hallucinations, people can sometimes have command hallucinations. And so when I'm assessing someone, I'm asking, are you hearing things? If they say, yes, I'm hearing voices. Can you tell what the voices say? And if they say yes, okay, what do they say to you? What kind of things? Mm-hmm. Do they ever tell you to do things? And then do they ever tell you to hurt yourself? Do they ever tell you to hurt another person? Because both of those things are fairly common. Yes, they tell me to kill myself.
Wow.
Is a pretty common one. Or hurt myself.
And a lot of times they might be very critical, right?
Yeah, usually there are some people who have neutral ones. Mm-hmm. I've had some people say that their voices just narrate what they're doing and say like, oh, take your meds, get up, brush your teeth,
right.
Stuff like that. But a huge amount of the time it's very negative. And a lot of the time it's like, you're a piece of shit. Mm. Nobody likes you. Yeah. It's just like taunting, putting you down, talking shit to you. And that is oftentimes what they're experiencing. So they're really, really suffering, as much as anyone with an auditory hallucination is probably suffering, because it's distracting and it's taking them out of the real
neutral,
world.
Right? It's still not helpful in most cases. Well, it's not helpful.
No, it's still distracting, right? And it's taking them out of the reality around them that other people experience. But then, like, you know, multiply that if they're telling them really terrible things. Okay, I'm going to speak really briefly about psychotic depression as well. Just because she says that her dad starved himself to death.
Yeah, which would have to be rare.
Yes, so I was just going to say that. Someone restricting their eating in either a depressive episode or a psychotic episode is not uncommon, and we definitely see it a lot. But to actually starve to death would take, like, forever.
And it can be a form of self-harm, too.
Yeah.
You know, the extremes of restricting eating. Almost like a self-punishment at times. But is it uncommon for people to die of, like, eating disorder-related issues?
No.
Because it's very dangerous, right?
Eating disorders have a pretty high mortality rate as far as mental illnesses go.
Not that you're starving to death, but that, you know, lack of nutrition is the key factor in, you getting sick and potentially dying.
If your electrolytes get terribly off because you're not eating, you could have a heart attack.
Gotcha.
Right? Like, it just... Or if you're super dehydrated, you could have a clot. Like, all these things just kind of contribute. Here is our little nomenclature break. Okay, you ready?
Love it.
Thought we were on a break.
No, it's just another one. Quiz time for Steve.
Okay, get ready.
Okay, so I'm to tell you what these things are.
And you can call a friend. That's me.
Oh yeah, you can call a friend.
Okay. You can poll the audience. That's me.
Okay.
What's the other one?
Shoot the moderator.
Shoot Regis?
50-50?
50-50?
Okay. All right, we're going to start a little outside of psych, okay?
Okay.
Fine.
Hypertension.
That I'm very stressed about something, that's immediately what's coming to my head. Like, overly worked up about one certain issue.
Okay. It's high blood pressure.
So they can go hand in hand.
See, guys?
They can go hand in hand.
Just straight up high blood pressure.
I would, if I were you, try to break down the words into their pieces, and it might help you.
Okay, into Latin?
Yeah, just try to speak Latin.
Remember your studies in Latin, in the classics?
I mean, this is a horror movie podcast. We got to have
He's
some Latin.
He's like, hyper-tensione. That's pig Latin.
Hyper-tensione.
Tachycardia.
Something
break
heart
it down into Yeah, something break it down into its parts.
Something heart-related.
Yep.
Can you use it in a sentence?
You want me to spell it? Yeah, I could use it in a sentence.
Steve was asked what the word tachycardia means.
Okay, this guy has hypertension and tachycardia.
Ooh.
I'm concerned.
This poor bastard.
I'm going to call the cardiologist. Yeah, very good. It's a fast heart rate.
Okay.
And bradycardia is a heart rate that is too slow.
Mm. Okay, go home, tell your wife she's giving you tachycardia. Yeah.
And hypertension.
But not the slow one.
Okay, echopraxia.
Echopraxia.
This is a psych one.
Mm-hmm.
Echopraxia. Air breathing.
Do you want a hint?
Sure.
Monkey see, monkey do.
Like copying?
Yeah. So it's if I were to do a motion, if I go like this and I scratch my head in a really exaggerated manner.
Right.
While I'm talking to you and you do the same thing.
Okay.
And then if it's, is echolalia is that, pertaining echo, only to words?
Echolalia is speech. So it's repeating speech. It's echoing.
It's repeating speech. It's echoing.
Yes. Okay, now I've got one.
Yes.
I've
exactly.
got one like for this one. I'm going to say to Steve first, and I'm sorry, Steve, you're not going to get it. And then I will open it up to you because I don't know if you're going
to
get it either.
To the audience.
Okay. I'll open it up to the audience. Okay. Anosognosia.
Oh, God.
Nope. I just learned the last thing that pushed that out of my head the other day. And it's not
there's
in
no
there
room.
Anymore.
Okay, yeah. No room for it. All right, John.
And?
Do you want me to spell it or break it down? Say it slow.
And is the Nos N-A-U-S?
It's N-O-S.
N-O-S. And Nos. And usually means like.
So A
like
means not something.
Anaphylaxis, yeah. Okay. No, I don't think I'll get anything. What is it?
It means a lack of insight. You don't know you're sick.
Oh, okay.
If it's a lack of insight, that's what I'm kind of feeling right now.
So like.
Yeah, you're giving us that word right now.
Agnosia kind of refers to knowing something. A is not. So like something that would be, what am I trying to say? Anaerobic is something that happens without oxygen. Aerobic is something that happens with oxygen.
Okay.
So A just means not, basically. And Nos refers to medicine treatment. So like the word for an illness you acquire in hospital, it's not anymore. Now it's hospital acquired infection, but it used to be nosocomial infection. So if you're going to break it down into its Latin roots, that's how you do it.
Guys, we're all learning today.
Yeah. I'm sure you're super glad that you tuned into this horror movie podcast.
Like, how does that pertain to the movie again?
Shut up. You're going to like it.
Okay. I have more, but it's for later.
Okay.
We can jump back in.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Jenna.
You're welcome. You're welcome, John and Steve.
That was great. Guys, big words are incredible, especially when you know what they mean.
So Annie does get into her backstory quite a bit. And she says, you know, sometimes I feel like it's all ruined and that I'm to blame. And then they're like, you're to blame for what? And she says, well, that I am blamed.
Mm-hmm. I just sometimes feel like it's all ruined. And then I realize that I am to blame. Or not that I'm to blame, but that I am blamed.
And that's something that certainly comes up later in the movie, which is very interesting. You know what? I think that Annie in this movie has like an active and attuned subconscious, but she doesn't trust it. So she kind of knows something's not right, and she knows it's always been like that, but it goes on long enough. You have to think like, I guess
it's okay.
You know, I guess I'm just looking into it too much, or I guess I can't trust this instinct that I have.
Yeah. Even like letting her mom back in when she knew that she shouldn't have.
Yeah. And I think Annie has a sense of the impending doom and she feels responsible for it. She also knows at some level that things are heading in a really terrible direction. And so even some of the creepy, very scary things she does when she's sleepwalking might be to circumvent that. Right? Which is really interesting.
Yeah. Talk about subconscious. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, I'm not. Oh,
don't
big...
you sound Freudian?
Yeah. And obviously she wants to fuck Peter. There's no question.
Yeah.
And I'm not a very big psychoanalytic guy at all, but like that is what's presented in this movie, right? Like I'm not likely to think, oh, there's a deep subconscious reason that I'm late to work all the time. You know, it's like, well, I should probably get up earlier.
I think that Hollywood loves psychoanalysis though.
Yo, Hollywood does. It's very romantic, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like there's a deep rooted issue.
Yeah, that your subconscious is this big deep pool full of ideas
and ancient knowledge.
And that is like it's a tangible thing and it's real. Yeah. It's a nice idea.
Yep. So Peter's smoking weed. He's smoking weed in his room.
Smoking doobies.
Sorry, he gets invited to a party by his friend. It's implied he might have a chance to hook up with his paramour there.
Yeah, it says bring your dick. It
says bring your dick. And I thought that was from her, but it's just from one of his guy pals who wants, you know, doesn't want to block his c***.
And John and Steve, as high school friends, two straight white men, did you text each other this kind of thing? Well, you didn't have texty phones. No.
No.
You were using a rotary dial.
We would carve it on the underside of the desk to each other.
I sent a telegraph through the mail.
Beep, beep, beep,
you'd send it Monday. Bring your dick for Friday.
Bring your dick. Stop.
Yeah. Party this Friday. Stop.
Yeah.
You know what was the worst back in our time? Because texting was becoming a thing. T9.
Oh, T9 sucked. Yeah. Okay, kids, go home. Okay, go on YouTube right now and look up how to text T9.
There was one certain letter, I think it might have been a Q, you had to hit the button 5 times to get. But another shitty thing was sometimes you would be trying to text your friend and you'd accidentally send it to their landline.
Oh,
and it would read it out in a robot voice.
Their parent would pick it up and it would be some stupid Microsoft Sam thing reading out this text that you just sent.
Hey, fuckbag, party in the bush.
Bring your dick.
Bring your dick.
Bring your dick, yeah.
Oh, man, that sucked. Again, Charlie's making homunculus figurines.
Hey, speaking of Latin, do you want to say what a homunculus is?
I'm not the only one.
It's a statue of a person. It represents a person.
And so the homunculus used to be, there was a theory.
Homunculus? No.
That in terms of how, you know, how babies are made, that.
There was a theory.
Go on.
So there was a theory that the man would like just shoot a whole tiny, fully formed person up into his woman friend. That was the homunculus. That there was just a teeny, teeny, tiny little baby, like as small as a sperm, and that it all came from the
man.
A fully formed person, and then they just grow in the woman.
Gotcha.
Was once a theory.
Isn't?
So it is Latin for little person.
Yeah, and we've learned so much since then.
A homunculus is a small human being.
But it's also used to refer to statues.
Yeah, just a little person.
Yeah, like a little person representation. No,
I think you're using it completely appropriately.
What was the word I got so wrong? Asconce. Didn't want you looking at me asconce.
It wasn't that wrong. just a little bit too much mustard on it.
So she... too zesty. So she's making little statues again in her room. And we see, I think this is maybe the first representation of the disembodied floating blue light.
Yes.
And it goes like as a line across the whole room, as if you set up like a laser level.
Yeah.
And then it focuses into like a dot.
Right.
Right.
And it does that across her.
And it guides her around. Right. Mm. So I think this is a representation.
Guides her outside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think this is a representation of payment or of the wishes of the cult somehow. Mm. And it guides her outside and she sees like a fire burning with her grandmother in the center in a field. Right.
Yes. And then Annie comes running out and grabs her by the shoulders. And
not a good motherly reaction on that one. She missed on that one.
Because she says, are you some kind of idiot?
Yeah. What are you, some kind of idiot? Because she's out with
Who would say that to a kid?
No shoes and no coat.
Like that is just a huge, that seems like such a big stumble that should be easy to avoid.
It's also a generational thing, right? It's like some of that stuff is looked at differently. You know,
but in her generation of parenting a child of that age?
It was jarring for me to hear.
Yeah. Are you some kind of idiot?
But then, you know, maybe there are some parents that kind of, what are you, stupid? You got to blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean?
Some people don't necessarily weigh language as heavily.
And for that reason, their kids might not, like you might have an understanding of the way that person uses those words. Not to say it couldn't still sting. You know, I felt really sad for Charlie here.
Yeah, that wasn't a nice one.
Right?
No.
Because you could tell that the mom really loved her.
Just sounded harsh. Like,
well, and also.
What are you, some kind of idiot?
And it's very harsh. And also, and we've said, as someone who visibly presents as different, behaves in a way that's odd, is probably very othered by all her peers, and probably gets called an idiot by her peers, it shouldn't be coming from your mom.
No.
Yeah.
That should be the safe space.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's a good
should
point.
Be your safe person for sure.
Because Peter has asked to borrow the car. He wants to go to this party. There's snark right away. And you know what?
It is snarky.
It's coming from Annie.
Oh, it's Annie is super snarky.
He's like, hey, can I borrow the car? And she's like, what are you going to do with it? Well, is there going to be drinking? Oh, that's a crock. Blah, blah, blah.
Well, that's a crock.
And then like she's just like kind of being rude to him. And she's like, he's like, well, are you going to bring your sister? I don't know. Does she want to go? Well, have you asked her rude face?
She mimics his speech and says, well, I don't know. Have you asked her? Jeez. I don't know. Does she want to go? It's like she's like mocking him.
Yeah. And she's
mocking
pulling
her
all
child.
This face. She's serving lots of face to him. And he is just kind of tentatively approaching
her.
He's being really nice.
Yeah. And he's like, she's like, what? So you're not going to eat with us? It's like, no, I will. And then I'll go. It's like, you know, everything's just like, well, what? Well, lay it on me. What's the shitty part that you haven't told me?
And from the get-go, it's not neutral. It doesn't even start in neutral.
No, that's exactly what I wrote down. It's as if they just got into an argument and he pissed her off and came back. But he didn't. That's just the way they started.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I just kind of was feeling for Peter. He was getting a lot of sass. And Annie gets on this thing where she's desperate for him to take Charlie.
Mm.
She knows it's a party. She says so.
Yeah, why the heck is your 13-year-old going
to
go?
And she's 13, and she says, well, you're going to go with Peter to this party to be around other kids. And again, Charlie says, no, it's okay.
She says, that's okay.
And she's like, no, it's not. You're going.
I got the feeling that, like, she wanted them both. Just go. Get gone.
And you know what? That might be fair enough. Annie's going through it right now. Maybe she wants some time. But that's not the way, in my opinion. You know, you're going to send Charlie. Charlie's not going to fit in there. Anyone knows. Even Charlie knew it.
No, and when she gets there, she says, I don't know anybody. And she's uncomfortable. It's like the most typical that she acts.
Yes, exactly. And you know what? So I have some notes here. So what did you guys think of this party?
Well,
too many nuts. It was nutty.
Looked like your normal high school house party.
That looked like just a lot of
people. You
two,
like, you were getting invited to parties so much, I'm sure they blended together for you.
I was a sleepover type high school student.
Yeah, and playing mermaids type high school student, maybe not.
High school student.
Want to go to the pool and play mermaids? I have a note here. I think that when they're done right, parties are very scary in horror movies because they're filled with these tragic teens who don't care about each other. Don't care what happens to each other.
And you're anonymous in there. Nobody's paying attention. Nobody's looking out for your safety.
They're like inhumane. And you know what movie I thought did that really well was Talk to Me.
Yeah.
Where they go to all these parties and the kids are kind of nasty. They don't really like each other. There were like three friends, but they were unpredictable kids and they could be really mean and you're at a party with them. Mm-hmm. You know, it just, they feel unsafe. Mm-hmm. And that's the way I felt at this party. Like a bunch of kids who look like they're really cool and I don't want to say something wrong in front of them. And then you got Charlie there dressed in her
same sweatshirt she's been wearing the whole time.
Like, what was Peter thinking? But one thing that you mentioned,
he didn't want her to go.
wanted to have sex with somebody.
Yep.
One thing that you mentioned, you both did, they are chopping a mountain of walnuts.
So many.
To make a cake at a party in an oven. Like people
do. Yeah, that's bizarre.
Right? Like, that's weird. But you know what the way I took it? That was like a sick joke about just how inevitable things were. It's almost like the demon or the payment or the cult or whatever. It's like almost like a joke how absurd it is.
Mm-hmm. And it's like Final Destination.
And they're making it happen.
Like, why are there so many nuts at this party? And also, Charlie is cognizant of the fact that she has an allergy. She picks out chocolate bars that don't have nuts and can reassure her dad, there's no nuts in this. And yet she just picks up this strange cake made at a party, no problem.
And you know those high school kids are not chopping those nuts fine enough that they're disappearing into that cake.
No.
You know you're looking at that piece of cake. Yeah.
Heck no.
She's chomping on some walnuts. And she eats the whole cake.
You got to garnish the top.
There's probably walnuts on each little dollop of icing. But then also she's eating it and she's going as she's eating it and she keeps eating it. And I think if you're a person with an allergy, you wouldn't do that.
You'd know you were starting to go.
Yeah. But that's, as you say, they were on rails. They never had any choice. It wasn't ever going to go any other way.
Exactly. And that's one of the creepiest parts. And also, she is eating the cake like an animal and like a baby. It's like all like over her face, you know?
Yep.
Like Charlie she's so mowing weird.
It. Yeah. Oh, yeah. She just behaves oddly in every situation.
What do you think about Peter's little back and forth with that girl he likes?
I mean,
there was a lot of attitude in there.
I think like the using, hey, I've got really good weed as a crutch is like a little bit pathetic, but also
does
not
work.
You get a lot of guys with you.
A lot of dudes. Yeah.
You know what that's like? You know what that's like?
What?
That's like when you go to the gym to build muscles to get girls. And what you get is a lot of, hey, what's your arm routine, bro? Hey, what's your pre-workout?
I think our brother can relate to that.
Yeah, or when you learn guitar and you're like, I need to get so many chicks, bro. What you get is like, dude, what's your rig? What pedals do you use? And it's all guys. Same with cars. Like, so many of the things are like
that. Well, I mean, that's like fashion with girls. Yeah. Like, fashion is not for, like, attracting the male gaze.
It's, oh, cute boots. Where did you get those?
Often, or like, oh my gosh, like, you look so hot. And you're more likely to get a girl saying that than a guy.
Doesn't it mean more coming from a girl?
Oh my God, yes.
More than like, oh, she's sexy hot. Oh, I like the way she looks and knows.
Fuck you.
Fuck off.
I have a reputation of when I'm drinking of doling out a lot of compliments. I love doing that.
Oh man, there's so many worse kinds of drunks.
I'm a pretty good kind of drunk.
That's great.
Jenna, you have a problem.
Everyone's happy.
Not at this party.
So yeah, the party scene's just interesting. He tries to chat up Bridget, but she's kind of snarking him pretty good too. Yep.
But she also goes to smoke some doobies.
Yeah, but he's like, how's the party? And she's like, why, are you thinking about coming? Kind of
rude.
That
was great. I loved her
like,
from that one.
Oh, poor Peter. Well, he missed a good opportunity. Well, yeah, I'm thinking about coming.
Yeah, I am.
Hello.
You're on your
I brought my dick. Oh, yeah, he missed an opportunity to say that.
And then that would have clinched it for him.
That's what between that and the bag of pot, she would have been home in a minute.
She's like, he's a regular Cary Grant.
Oh man, this guy's a regular Abbott and Costello over here. Those are two people.
Which one, Abbott or Costello?
No, this guy's a regular Barry Manilow, am I right? Who knows? I don't know. We'll cut some of this out.
I hope so.
Yeah, so you were right, too. Charlie had some social skill where she's like, he's like, just go get a piece of cake. And she's like, they're not giving them to everyone. And then he said, oh, just go stand in line. You'll get one. She's like, I don't even know anyone here.
Yeah, you know? That's like the most tuned in that she seems to be.
The most normal thing she says in the whole movie, right? And yeah, she's eating it. Peter goes to a secluded room with a girl. But the funny thing is, right? She's
there's like, bros there.
She goes with him. She walks in and she's like, hey, Peter's got weed. And there's two other people there. So he's like, fuck. No.
And they're actually massaging each other on the bed. He's not. He's smoking by the window.
He's like smoking by himself in the end. And as he's smoking, Charlie kind of finds him, stood in the doorway, and she's like, Peter.
Peter.
Are you okay?
It's hard to breathe.
What do you mean?
I think my throat's getting bigger.
Which is such a weird way to say it,
right?
It is
a weird way to say it, but it's true. You would feel like your throat is getting smaller because the airway is getting smaller, but the tissues of your throat are indeed getting bigger. But it is a weird way to say it.
And I think it just plays into Charlie's strangeness.
Weirdness.
Yeah. Yep.
But also neck and head trauma is a huge part of this movie. You know, it's like there's so much preoccupation with head trauma, head injury, decapitation. And it just like it plays through the whole movie, which is really cool. Peter carries her like a little babe in arms, like a toddler.
Which I know, right? this part.
She koalas around him. She koalas him,
and he's got his hand on her head. I know.
And that he races her out of there.
It's touching to me.
They're flying down these remote roads because obviously this was an isolated party.
Right.
There's no street lights practically, right? Like it's dark.
Practically.
Mm. This is one of the most iconic scenes. Mm. Across horror, people know this scene. Mm-hmm. So, Jenna, I wondered if you wanted to kind of take it from here to describe this scene for us.
Peter's driving like a bat out of hell. He's reassuring her. We're on the way to the hospital. She is unbuckled in the back, feet thrashing, kicking the door, and hands clutching at her throat. She can't breathe. She's gasping. A panicky feeling inside that car. I feel like...
Yes, very well played.
It would be just very oppressive and scary. And she can't breathe. She rolls down her window to try to get some air, which... probably wouldn't have helped anyway. And there's roadkill in the road. It suddenly becomes illuminated by Peter's headlights. He swerves to avoid the roadkill, which looks like a deer or something like that. And in so doing, runs closer to the side of the road and smacks her head into a pole. And
sock.
Her head is off.
Did not see that coming.
It's shocking,
like,
right?
Very, very, very jarring.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
And it's one of those things, too, and I think, like, we might have all done, but certainly you're like, no!
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, you have a reaction to it, right?
Oh, it was...
She's a little girl.
Yeah. And this is the sound, just whatever sound it effect they did, too, it was awful.
Like,
yeah.
Meat hitting the table.
It was
table
very meat slap, yeah.
And then, you know, from there, we just zoom in on Peter, another one of these long shots, unbroken, and he just kind of sits there for a long time.
Yeah,
breathing heavy, not saying anything, not even turning around.
He's sitting there. He doesn't turn around. Foot on the brake. Not like he didn't even put it in park. He's just frozen. Hands on the steering wheel, foot on the brake, not turning around. He can't bring himself to look in the rearview mirror even. He sees a glimpse of it. That's too much. Just breathing. He can't speak. He can't do anything. Slowly eases his foot off the brake, drives home.
Drives home.
Gets out of his car. He parks his car, gets out of his car.
We kind of follow him the whole way.
Oh, goes up the stairs, and you hear the parents say, oh, you hear the mom say, oh, good, they're home. She hears them coming.
Really?
Yeah, you hear her say, oh, good, they're home. Oh,
I didn't pick up on that.
So he passes their door, and you hear her say it. And then he goes to his own room, lays down in bed, goes to sleep, or doesn't, remains in bed. And then it's the morning, you hear Annie saying she's going to go out and do an errand. You hear her open up the door.
And it's morning time, right?
Looking at Peter's face, but hearing this happen.
Yeah.
And little confused noises, some scuffling, and then just blood curdling, screaming because she has found her daughter's body. That's like,
oh,
I'd be like, bring me to the hospital right now.
Another kind of knockout performance by Toni Collette because her sounds.
Oh my God.
They're like animalistic.
It's harrowing.
Right.
Just to listen to her.
Exactly. And then we get a really cool transition where it goes from that and you're hearing her scream from Peter's perspective. And then it kind of switches into her crying in her room. With and Steve kind of trying Steve to do what he can, kind of hands on her shoulders,
yep, doing
but she's
what he
in
can.
Like a downward dog position, just rocking back and forth and screaming. And
saying, I want to die.
I just need to die. I want to die. And you know what's the really painful part? A, you're watching that. And then B, it kind of slowly, again, just the camera moving. And then it goes into the hallway and Peter stood right outside the door just kind of listening to it.
Hello listeners, John here. Wanted to let you know that for the first time in Fear Response history, we are splitting our episode about a movie into two parts. We just had so much to say about Hereditary that we didn't want to put out, you know, an episode that was too long. And so you are witnessing history for the pod right now with your ears, and we will be glad to provide part two of our Hereditary Virgin Sacrifice episode 2 as quickly as we can. Thank you so much for listening to this first episode here. And as always, if you had a chance to rate, to subscribe, to share this podcast, if you're able, it really helps us out and we really appreciate it. So we also wanted to take the time to shout out the YouTuber that I referenced throughout this episode. That YouTuber's name is Novum. And he is the one who made a really comprehensive Hereditary Explained video on YouTube. It's several hours long, and he held my interest through the whole thing. It really goes to show just how deep this movie is and how many of the details were really thought about as the film was made. So absolutely go check it out. And as always, thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next time.